Environmental justice has to do in part with people who are regularly and unfairly exposed to the harmful waste streams and byproducts of our industrial economy. In this episode of Green Chem Essential, a look at how green chemistry can help these people by changing how industry does things. I'm James Ray, and I'm joined by Sidera Ross, a specialist in environmental justice with the American Chemical Society's Green Chemistry Institute. Well, Sidera Ross, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So we're here to talk about this intersection of green chemistry and environmental justice, specifically some of the solutions that green chemistry has to offer in the realm of environmental justice. And I want to prompt you to get us started with something that we talked about before this interview, which was you had sort of a thought, and it was this. It was that for the folks who are in communities who are inordinately affected by pollution in their lives, you sort of predicted that if these folks knew about green chemistry, knew more what it was, what it had to offer, that they might feel a certain way about it.
Yeah. So I remember when we were talking, one of the things that I think is super important is that the communities that are impacted about it, they are really passionate about seeing change. They want solutions. That's all they want. They want people to hear them and they want solutions. And if they really got a chance to grab hold of green chemistry and figure out what it was, they would be champions for it. I really do believe that. I believe that the people that, you know, are in these communities being impacted, they want to see change. They want to see innovation. And green chemistry is that avenue in that way. But a lot of times they might have never heard of it, or they might not know how to get engaged or how it can be used specifically for the issues that they're facing. But chemistry is everywhere, right? And if you're dealing with toxic pollution in your community, if you're dealing with air pollution, water quality issues, all these things have a lot of different implications and you need a lot of different stakeholders, but green chemistry is definitely central to creating the solutions necessary for it. So I think if we want to see champions, we definitely have to engage those communities so that we can actually grow the engagement with green chemistry globally and really get as many players a part of actually reaching that sustainable future. So it's very important.
Thank you. And you hinted wonderfully at, I think, where we're headed with this in terms of green chemistry and what it has to offer in terms of solutions. But before we get there, I want to be sure that folks are on the same page with us when we talk about environmental justice. So in your words, in this context, as we lay out this idea of environmental justice and the communities affected by pollution of different sorts, help our listeners, what's on your mind in that context?
Yeah, so I know the EPA usually defines it as the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people in regards to like their environment, right? And it kind of uses a lot of like legal terms a lot of times when it used to define what environmental justice is. But how I kind of like to define it is that everybody has the right to clean water, to clean air, to having a clean lifestyle, a healthy lifestyle. That is not a privilege. And so environmental justice is really that avenue and that pathway to say that we as, you know, a people, a community, we're going to fight to make sure that everybody has a right, has this right as just being a human living on the planet. And I think it's very important that everyone kind of figures out where they can play their role in the environmental justice movement. Because sometimes people feel like, oh, well, you know, that seems very much political or this, but it really isn't a political thing. It's more of a thing of like, everyone deserves to have good quality of life. And if you truly believe that everybody deserves to have good quality of life, clean drinking water, clean air, any of that, then you truly do care about environmental justice issues. So.
Now, the reality, of course, is, as you said, that the clean air, clean water, that it's a right. It's the unfortunate reality, of course, is that not everyone has been able to enjoy that right.
Yeah.
Which is going to bring us straight into the green chemistry piece. So in communities that you know, again, that in the work you're doing, what's happening in these communities that's, you know, denying them of that right, I guess. What are they experiencing?
There's so many things happening. It really depends on the community that you're in. But I always like to point to some of the big cases that people know about, right? People know about Flint, Michigan, right? You know, the lead in the water. Many people have heard of Cancer Alley, which is basically a corridor of different like chemical industrial companies that have led to so much toxic waste in communities and exposure that people have high rates of cancer. There's just so many different communities that deal with having landfills. They have all kinds of like toxic waste that's been put in their communities because it's been displaced and not properly disposed somewhere else. There's industries that don't also consider like how they're disposing of their waste. And so they put it there, or there's ones that are no longer in business. And so they just sit there and also create problems for the community. And I think there's just so many things that we can get into when it comes to environmental justice in terms of what communities are facing. And the challenge is that there is no one fix all solution. But what the great thing about, I think, about green chemistry is that you can always tailor it, right, to come up with the necessary solutions. You can go to those communities and say, hey, what are you looking for? What is the change that you seek in your community? And we can use great minds who think about green chemistry and engineering to figure out how can we generate something to actually create that solution. But it is hard when you think about all of the different tragedies you see happening. A lot of people think about, you know, natural disasters, but just like chemical disasters that happen. But every day there's communities that are dealing with just daily disasters happening to their community. And it's affected their health, it's affected their lifestyle, it's affected how they live. And they think it's normal, you know, just to smell chemical products that are very toxic for them to be inhaling on a daily basis. They're like, yeah, you know, this is what it should be like. This is progress into some people's mind, right? We have industry around us, so that's progress, that's jobs. But I do think there's also the ideology of understanding what's the impact, right? In terms of your long-term, what life do you want to live? What life do you want your children to live? And how can we make communities that's impactful and thoughtful where we can have those great green jobs, right? And great communities as well, so.
Thank you. And you brought up many important and wonderful things to talk about. One, you just framed one thing, though, I think in a way that's really interesting, which is you mentioned, you know, we all hear about these disasters. There was, of course, the train wreck early last year, in Ohio. That one of the more recent ones that really caught national attention because of what was spilled and the dangers involved in those chemicals now being in that community. And those big accidents, the big sort of single events, tend to catch our attention. But your point being, and I think this is a really powerful way to talk about environmental justice, is that the people we're talking about when we talk about environmental justice are effectively living out that kind of dynamic day to day of their lives. Maybe not the same level of exposure, you know, to chemicals as might happen when an entire train car releases something.
Yeah.
But the point being that their homes are near the air, the water, the materials, whatever it is that are being put out by certain industrial locations, that's affecting their health, their livelihood, their life, and their future, as you said.
Yeah. And I think people don't always think about it that way, just because, you know, we see the big things, we're like, oh, that's so bad. But there's thousands of communities nationwide, probably hundreds of thousands globally, right, that are experiencing those daily engagement with toxicity, dealing with pollution, dealing with things that ultimately will affect their health in a terrible way. And these are their communities. Like, you know, when these natural disasters happen, you know, at least people are like, well, let me displace myself, let me see if I can move somewhere else. There might be assistance to help move them. But because people don't always look at these communities as important and maybe not always hear their voices, they're essentially kind of stuck in those situations to live in communities that aren't always the best fit for their health, not the best fit for them having a righteous life, a life that should be filled up like, you know, a joyful community, not one that's full of like dark pollution, you know, floating in the air and, you know, all kinds of weird smells when they go outside, or it feels dirty. It just feels like no one cares about it, right? Yeah. And I think it's important that we see it that way. And I think that that also challenges the people to recognize that they're somewhere probably near you where you can impact that community, right? Let's say you saw the Ohio situation. You're like, oh, that seems like so much. What do I do about that? That seems a little too much for me. Well, I'm 100% certain, especially if you live near a city, there's some EJ environmental justice community that you can work with, talk with, engage with, you might be a part of, and really see change happen even on that local level. And when we start to try to mitigate these smaller issues, we stop the bigger issues. You know what I mean? I think sometimes we're like, oh, well, how did this happen? Well, these communities have been in disarray probably for generations. And then this big thing happens and everybody's like, oh, that's terrible. Yeah. But we could have really prevented a lot of this if we would have been more thoughtful about what we were doing and how we were engaging. And again, green chemistry is all about preventing. So I think that it's key that we put that into our mindsets and why it's so like it's so greatly aligned with environmental justice.
So that brings us wonderfully to the green chemistry piece of this. So we've talked about, you know, folks who living in communities who might be exposed to things that they shouldn't be exposed to over long periods of time or short. And you hinted at, I mean, the multitudes of things that people can do for themselves or to help people in the communities to start to solve some of these problems. But if we talk specifically about green chemistry, what does green chemistry bring to the picture? And you started to hint at it, but let's get really specific about it. What can green chemistry, does it bring to that picture to start that could start to solve some of these challenges?
Okay, yeah, there's a lot it can do. So when you think about our world currently now, everything's about getting things quickly. People want things Amazon. People want short use products. People, you know, they want plastic plates when they have their cookout. They want to have all these like single use things. They want to have quickness. And when it comes to development, where it's their, you know, their household products or the things that they engage with in their daily lives. And all of that is chemistry. And a lot of times we don't think about, well, how are these things being generated, right? They come from fossil fuels, which is negative for us. But then also how the companies are also processing some of these things aren't the most efficient. They're not the most effective in terms of energy, in terms of waste that's generated, also how they're actually managing their waste, all these kind of things we don't think about. So when we look at chemical companies, one of the things that I think is worth talking about is how are they doing the chemistry, right? You know, how can they engage in more green chemistry practices, right? So if they are in a community, they know that the things that they're actually generating are benign, which basically means it's not going to cause these toxic after effects that might happen with the generation of another product that might lead to if somebody's exposed to it, you know, cancer or, you know, some long-term, very rare disease. And this is not just helpful for the people in the community, but also for the chemists doing the work, right? If we're doing chemistry in a safer, actually greener way, we're actually protecting the people doing that chemistry work as well. So it really does bring, I think, into view how we can shift some of the mindset when it comes to, okay, we have these products we want to use. We have all these things we want to generate and create. But if that thing is not going to be overall, I'd say, beneficial in a holistic way, in a systems thinking way, then we really have to question, okay, how valuable is it? Because is the development of a product more worth, is more important than a person's like life and livelihood and how they live their life? So green chemistry helps in all of those things and in the development of even how we can remediate some processes. But mainly it's all about preventing. It's really about let's generate things and let's create things. Let's use this tool, green chemistry, to really create things that don't cause problems. Because a lot of times people think chemistry, oh, that's the bad guy. I want no chemicals in my products. I don't want any chemicals at all. But in reality, that doesn't make a lot of sense because everything is chemicals. Everything is chemistry, right? So you can't get rid of them. So if you see a product that says no chemicals in it, they're just trying to market to you. That is not true. So you have to really think about, you know, how can we use this tool that's all around of us in the most efficient and effective way? And I think that's really about what green chemistry is about and really just developing it so that we can make the change that we want to see and have a future for our future generation. So
I love the idea that you hinted at this, that when we're talking about these different facilities that are, you know, the areas where environmental justice challenges are happening, they're not just in a vacuum. These are facilities that sit somewhere on the, I think you even said the words value chain. There's somewhere in the process of turning raw materials into the things that we need and use in our lives. Now we can always argue which of those things we actually do need. But to the extent, you know, to the extent there are things that society uses, they have to be made. Yeah. And they're going to be made in processing plants that themselves are supplied with from different chemical plants and such. And as you said, chemical is it's taken on a bad connotation, but chemical, we are chemical. Chemical
exactly.
is all of us and all around us. But the idea being, okay, if we're going to be making these things, can we do it in a way that doesn't put the community next to that facility at risk, right?
Yes, that's basically what I think that we want to be thinking about, and what industry I think is really moving forward when it comes to talking about incorporating green chemistry. It really is now being more thoughtful of, okay, we're going to be creating something, but, you know, let's make sure that what we're creating isn't impacting the people that live in the community that we are residing in, right? We're hosted in. But then on top of that, I think that when we can, they can also do a job of engaging that community, right? Engaging them and saying, hey, you know, we're working to figure out how can we do a better job of this or that. And they can share, you know, if they had like a town hall or something, share, you know, yeah, we've experienced these things. I think that could be helpful so they can understand the impact of, you know, different exposures, and also understand how, I guess, green chemistry plays a role in actually mitigating some of the things. And it'll be good to have that data, that statistics to show like, okay, when the community is in a place where there's a lot of industry that doesn't think about this, they're fully toxic, hey, everything bad, you know, what does that look like? And what does the health lifestyle look like versus a community where that industry, that industrial company actually takes on green chemistry in a real sincere way and really involves the community in engaging about how can we continue to make sure that we're building a healthy community around us. I think that you would see a big difference in, you know, people's health, their lifestyle, how they feel, and how they feel supported.
When you say when a company takes on green chemistry, without getting into great detail, because we will get into detail in other episodes, folks, and specific, very specific processes. But Sidera, broadly speaking, you know, when you say a company takes on green chemistry and starts to do things within the, you know, within the realm of green chemistry, what are we talking about? Help folks understand what those, like, what types of changes they'd be making that can improve it, so that, again, they're not putting out, you know, unhealthy waste streams or something through the smokestack.
We're
storing chemicals on site that are just inherently dangerous.
Yeah. So I always think about it two ways, right? So typically when green chemists bring on different things, there's usually how you design a product, right? Like, so what are you using to actually design the actual chemical or molecule itself? And then greener process design. That's like, how am I scaling up my process so that I can make it industrial? And how am I making my process more efficient when it comes to energy and all these other kind of aspects? So when a lot of people go into the chemical design, that all has to do with a little bit more innovation that the company will take on to actually figure out, okay, if I want this particular molecule with this particular function, right, I also have to start thinking about, now, what is the sustainability of this molecule in terms of, is it going to be biodegradable, right? Is it going to be something that, you know, will have, or will it be something that ends up staying longer into the, you know, the life cycle of our planet, and we are like dealing with it years later, right? So they have to think about these things when they're making choices. So they don't just think about function, they also think about the sustainability and the greenness of that molecule when they design it. And then as they scale that up, they're like, okay, well, now I want to make sure that I get the purest or the best product, you know, so that has to do with like solvents. And so a lot of times that can lead to a lot of waste, where a lot of waste comes with industry solvents. How can I reduce this? How can I make this more efficient? How can I use less heating in a process? How can I use less energy? And these things might sound like very like specific, but those minor changes and shifts, right, whether in how you actually develop a chemical or molecule for a process or versus how you actually do that process, makes a huge difference in the impact on the community, right? Because now you might not be having all this secondary product, which usually is the stuff that goes out in people's smokestacks and ends up as the negative stuff that you don't want or in your groundwater, right? You're actually having a more efficient process where you're getting out all of the product that you actually want. You're not using as much solvent. You're not doing all these other things that's going to actually lead to you having waste or as much waste, or you're not leading to all these byproducts that you know might be kind of toxic, but it's like, hey, that's part of the process. That's what we have to do to get what we want in the situation. So I think that, you know, when people look at industry, those are the two main things that they tailor. And just by shifting those, that causes a really huge ripple effect, right? Because if every industry started doing this, then you wouldn't have to worry about when you go to places like, if you've ever been to China, I don't know if people have been to China, but if you ever go, they have good air quality days and bad air quality days. And because so much of our industry's in China, people don't recognize how much of a problem that causes for their air quality on a daily basis. So I went there one time for a research conference, and I was like, oh, it's so like foggy. Like, why is it so foggy? What is all this fog? Actually, it was a really poor air quality day. And I didn't realize why people weren't outside. There was no one outside. Most people, they were wearing masks. And this was pre-pandemic, right? So a lot of times people don't recognize that it really can cause a really big issue for us in the States, of course, in the communities we exist. But it's a global issue. Environmental justice is a very big global issue. And sometimes, even in the United States, we deal with a lot. But there's some that we outsource to other countries and other places. So we really don't really see the huge impact that industry has on, you know, our overall environment, but then climate change, global warming, all of that. So
sure.
Yeah, it's very important that we consider those things.
Well, thank you. And for folks watching, there are a couple of things that Sadara has mentioned that are very much going to be part of other episodes in this series. First of all, the idea that, again, environmental justice, the two of us talking right now live in the United States, but this is very much a global issue, of course. And it's why the United Nations, among others, has taken on green chemistry and is building programs around it for this very exact reason, for all of the communities around the world who are exposed, you know, to unhealthy environments because of the way that we have traditionally manufactured things. And the idea that green chemistry can change that dynamic to make those plate locations safer places to work and live. So again, there will be shows about that UN activity around the world, how that's taking place. And then again, there are other many, many other episodes that dive specifically into when Sadara is talking about, you know, they can choose a design to design a process or how you're making this product in a way that sort of starts to do away with the problems that are the things that are causing the community's problems, be it for pharmaceutical manufacturing or textile dyes or pesticides or, you know, any number of the types of fuels we're using, the batteries we're making, any number of things we're doing. Each episode in this series is going to be diving into many of those specific territories to show exactly how scientists are working to change those systems. So I would encourage you to tune into other episodes to find out really the how behind all of that. But Sadara, what I'd love to do now with you is have people understand how you got into this work, because I think it's a really interesting piece to this. So starting with environmental justice, what fueled your interest in environmental justice?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm born and raised Georgia Peach. And so I lived in like 5 minutes away from the largest airport basically in the world. And I remember as a kid, I used to think about, well, probably more of a rational fear. You know, all the planes going overhead and, you know, the engines falling out. But as I became more cognizant of the impact it has on communities, I started thinking about, like, this must be terrible, right? We have all of these fumes coming from the planes. We have all this stuff that's happening because we're so close. And I'm like, this can't be great for us, right? But, you know, you're just like, oh, okay, that's a thing. These were thoughts that were ruminating in my mind as a young kid. And it wasn't until I was in high school where I realized and I learned about green chemistry. I had a really good chemistry professor, and she was really amazing. And I was already into sustainability because I knew about the impacts of communities that it had. And I knew that I wanted to care about our environment. And when she told me what green chemistry was, I was like, this is the solution, right? You see all these issues occurring in our communities, in our world. And I'm like, if we did green chemistry, we would eliminate basically everything. So I was like super excited. And so I was like, that's what I'm going to do. And so I went into college and I started working with one of my professors, and I worked on biodegradable polymer systems where we diverted waste from landfills by really figuring out how we can make single-use plastics actually biodegradable and not actually harmful and be left in our landfills for 100 so years. And then later on, I went to grad school where I actually focused a little bit more on air quality and air pollution because I studied resin stabilized radicals, which are these basically these molecules that lead to make black carbon or soot. A lot of people see this in their chimneys. They see this if they have like those old cooking systems. They see that black carbon stuff. It's really bad for your health. And it also helps to propagate and exacerbate climate change. So I did a lot of studying with that, with analytical and physical chemistry. And now I'm here today working with ACS, where I get to continue to communicate the green chemistry, the thing that I love, and really talk about how it can make a really big impact in environmental justice communities. And I think that's really important to me, just growing up and seeing being engaged in activities ever since I was in college, you know, doing cleanups, doing all these different things, and seeing how much of an impact and a difference it made when I engaged with environmental justice like activists and leaders, and I would tell them like, yeah, chemistry is this, chemistry is that, and they're like, what? I didn't think about that. And they saw young passionate students really wanting to do something about their environment. They felt encouraged. So I know that this is something that people will really grab hold to the more that they learn about it, and the more that we, as you know, chemists and as you know, community activists work together, I really think that we can blow green chemistry up.
So you came to this again from your childhood living near Atlanta International Airport, I think, right? That's what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes.
Those childhood experiences, and then this exposure to green chemistry starting in high school, I think you said.
Yeah, which is not very normal.
Yeah. Well, hopefully more and more normal, but we'll see. And then went on to get your doctorate in chemistry, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you have your PhD in chemistry. And then all the while increasingly connecting these two dots, connect the, what these communities need, what green chemistry has to offer, kind of all wrapped in up in one person.
Yeah, kind of. I kind of do feel like I am, if there could be like a personal embodiment of like this intersection, I do feel like it would be kind of me in a way. But I know that there's other people too passionate about both, both in STEM as well as, you know, chemistry. And as I've gone to different conferences there, the next generation is very, very passionate about this, right? They've seen it in their communities. They want to know how they can use chemistry. They want to know how they can use engineering. And they're looking for opportunities to be able to do that. And I think that we really can really shift it, our mindset, because I do think that one thing we don't think about is when we talk about sustainability and a sustainable future, equity is very much a part of that, right? Justice is very much a part of that, right? If we really tackle equitable issues, right, if we really made sure that everybody had even playing field in terms of their air, their environment, what they're able to experience on a daily, just on the local level, right? If we did that everywhere, we will really be able to tackle that big thing that we call climate change, that big thing that we're trying to get to. If we started really centering it on the in an equity lens, a lot of these things will be just solved, because now we're prioritizing everybody's right to have these things. We're prioritizing that it's important for people to live where they don't feel like overwhelmed or burdened by the community impacts in terms of like waste and toxicity and all these pollution. So I do think it's really important for us to think about it in that way. No matter what your background is, I think it's important for us to kind of like recognize when we really care about every single community, by doing so, we reach that sustainable future.
When we talked previously, you mentioned that there's another piece of this that I want to make sure we talk about, because there's many examples, I think, in the world over many, many years in sustainability and other things, where people with wonderful intentions come into communities, we're here to help, you know, and come in sort of with the answers and sort of prescribe, here's what the answer is. And I think when we talked earlier, before this interview, you had noted that an important piece of your interest in this work is making sure that in the realm of green chemistry, that doesn't get repeated, right?
Restate
this how you want, but the idea that hearing first from the communities that are affected by these environmental issues, again, in this umbrella of environmental justice, and making sure that green chemistry solutions that are brought to them are fed by information first and foremost gathered from the community.
You're hitting it on the nail, okay. The nail on the head.
Tell us about that and how that happens. Cause it's not necessarily obvious how that channel of information would inform a chemical design for, you know, tell us more about that,
please. Yeah. So a lot of times, I mean, people typically, we have, especially, you know, when you're in the world of chemistry, we are very like already set, you know, we have our research journals, our things that we focus on. And we have a way and a strategy of how we think about what's next and what's important and what's the new innovation. But I always think if you go to the community, a lot of times they can give you insight into things you may have never thought of, right? Because now you can actually understand why they want it, right? What's this application actually for, right? And I think sometimes our problems is not that we don't have all the answers, but we're just not asking the right questions, right? And to, when we go to the community, we get the question, the questions now come to us so that we can come up with real answers. And so I do think that that engagement is central. We have to be, I think when we go into communities, whether you're representing an industry, whether you're just a chemist or whatever, it definitely has to be in the mindset of, I want to listen first. I want to hear them out about what's going on. And sometimes people are like, well, they're talking about all these other things. That's great. That's important for them. But I think that a lot of times they list out what they want to see. And now that might inform us to say, well, we've been doing all of this research in this one area, but really to really make a big impact in this community and maybe other communities alike, I actually need to be doing this work. Right. So this is how we get green chemistry to have more immediate impact, I think, because I think that we have a lot of great research being done currently. But sometimes it's hard to get that. That impact might happen 10 years later. Right. You know, it might happen way down the line, or there might be solutions that we didn't even realize are already there. I was at one meeting and even they were talking about how that whole Ohio disaster actually could have been prevented because there had been something actually created to stop that in the green chemistry realm. But no one really even knew about it and never scaled it up. Right. So, like, I think that if we had more of a where we had our engage the community, they could be activists to say, hey, we want this new innovation to be pushed. Right. Because now we've listened to them and they know that we're working hard to create that change in their community with the research we're doing. So now we don't have to worry about always advocating and pushing green chemistry as chemists. When we are trying to focus on the lab, we can have them be the advocates for that. And I think it really is a great symbiotic relationship where we can learn about the innovations necessary to solve the issues that are really impacting people now. And really we can maybe pivot some of the things we're doing and tailor in a way where we are really more effective in the communities locally, but then I think hopefully that then becomes global impact.
Sure. A couple of things that I want to come back to there, the advocacy part, that, you know, how they can make a difference. Yeah. I'm going to come back to that in a second, but first I think what you wonderfully set me straight in terms of, you know, how can that direction of information affect the chemical design? And as you stated, it becomes so obviously that I felt bad for saying what I said earlier, because as you stated, that green chemistry is all about intentional design. Yeah. It is chemists and chemical engineers coming into a problem and saying, we want X, we don't want Y. If we rethink and are really thoughtful from the beginning, we can get there. And I love how you're phrasing it, because you're basically just saying intentional design is based on having good information about the situation you're trying to tackle. And what you're saying is, yes, get that good information. And a vital piece of that information is hearing from these communities.
Yeah.
And then a wonderful design can potentially happen. So in that realm, I'm curious to hear from you. I've got to think from that perspective, people working in green chemistry, the scientists working on green chemistry, have you had, I would think that they would love this approach, because again, it's fueling, it's providing information for even better design.
Yeah. So I've had conversations with chemists about it. I do think that there is challenges in there, because usually the question is, I say this, they're like, yeah, this sounds great, but how do I get connected with the communities? That's always the first question, right? Like, they're like, I don't know who to talk to. I don't know where to go. I don't know how to engage, right? And so sometimes that usually is the first barrier to that change. And it's not just let's say an academic researcher trying to figure out the community engage. It's definitely industry as well. They're like, well, how do I engage these communities? I don't know. But I don't think it's as hard as they think it is. A lot of times these organizations, especially grassroots environmental justice organizations, they have websites. You can look them up. You can Google them. You can literally probably say environmental justice communities in your area, right? And there'll be things that's coming up. But one of the things I do know what we're working on is creating a repository with our sustainability platform so people can find it easier, which is, I think, will be helpful so they can go and say, oh, okay, I live in this area, this region, this community, I can like go and listen and figure out how I can assist. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of times, you know, people, that usually is the barrier. Like they're like, this sounds great, but how do I do it? And also I think the initial part you have to think about is it will be a different approach, right? You know, usually, you know, us spending hours in the lab, you know, just, you know, going in on an issue, that seems okay, that's normal. But then now you're saying, okay, now I need to go engage with other people and maybe spend that amount of time also engaging with people. That's a different kind of approach. So people getting used and maybe shifting their mindset is usually the conversation I have, like, hey, you know, take a little bit at a time because the goal is really to be intentional, right? So you're not solving every problem. That's also why I tell people, they're like, well, we can't engage every community. You're not solving every problem, right? Your goal is to pick one, pick your niche, you know, find one that you feel like you can really like engage with and start asking those really good questions, because I think that you will be surprised how well that informs you. And I think that it will actually make our research more robust. And there's a lot of people out there looking for grant money and funding. And they, a lot of times they ask, what's your broader impacts, right? They ask that a lot of times. And so, you know, when you have more intentional things, I think it really does allow for you to get even more support too, right? To actually go and help communities and figure out how you can play a role. Because again, it's a role we play, right? We're not every, when it comes to solving issues, there's multiple stakeholders, there's multiple partners, right? There's a partnership that come to play. And as chemists and researchers, we're one partner, right? We're one person in a bigger puzzle of things. And when we come in, we can really offer our services, our knowledges, and our knowledge to a situation. And I think that communities are really, really happy about that, actually. They need grassroots organizations from being engaged with, they need help. They want people to be wanting to come and listen and provide new ideas and provide, you know, maybe a perspective, especially when it comes to the science part, that can really, I would say, legitimize some of the stuff that they're trying to do. So I think it's really important that, you know, when I talk with chemists, I always say, hey, you know, it's not as challenging as you think it is to start. It's just really with a conversation, you know, and going to a meeting and just listening.
And I want to, it was in what you were just talking about, but you were talking about, you know, when, as you go and you talk, when the industry folks or the academics maybe come to you and how can we engage the communities. On the other side of that equation, folks in the community themselves individually, or as you said, through these grassroots organizations working on environmental justice. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is the goal in offering them a view on green chemistry to say, here's something you can be asking for, a step you can be offering industry where they can move in the right direction? What's your language to those folks from a green chemistry perspective?
Yeah. Am I making sense? No, I get what you're saying. So what I see it as, I guess, is a few different things, but the first part is kind of like what you said, advocating, right? So I think that the first step, if you are an environmental justice organizer, definitely advocating for, you know, if you know people are trying to put regulations in and things of that nature and they want industry to do something, definitely say, hey, we want to see you, you know, input green chemistry. We want to see you actually start to have those kinds of, you know, metrics in terms of how you're doing sustainability and what that really looks like and how you're reducing these different aspects, right? But I think the second part is that meaningful engagement that they're having with the chemist tells them a better way of how to communicate it to their industry, right? Like, so if you have a chemist who's on your team, right, now they can say, well, you know, they can actually inform you to let you know if the company is saying, oh, well, they said they're doing these greener initiatives. And then that person, well, that's really more like greenwashing. They're not really doing anything. You know what I'm saying? So now you, as an environmental justice person, you're now saying, well, I have a chemist on my team. I have this science expert on my team who is really informing me to let me know that we actually want to see these. They can give you they can now create a very strong list of demands because now they're getting real chemists in the room, real engineers in the room too, right? They can really say, no, these are actually things that are going to help move the things that you want to move forward. And now that will empower them to now know when they go to make their demands to these communities, to these industries, and they want to talk to different politicians about the things that they should be seeing, they can now say, hey, we have a list of demands. Our science expert has backed this up. You get what I mean? It really empowers them with the correct information. So when they communicate out, so you're making, I always like to say, like tiny green chemist advocates, right? Who can really, they're also can be really well-versed about the science to a certain degree, right? They might not have the full background, but when it's really well communicated by another chemist and they know they have that on their side, they can definitely ask, they can have a good ask in terms of what they want to see.
I think it's just so, it's powerful because there's, you know, confronting of the problem is one thing and important, but then knowing for the folks that, that there are active steps that can be taken that could improve the situation. I would think powerful for many, many reasons, not the least of which you're saying.
Yeah, no, I think that it really empowers people to really feel like there is, because sometimes when you're, especially if you live in a community where you're dealing with a lot of environmental justice, and let's say you're really the only champion right now, you have other few people, but you, they're all volunteers, it can be overwhelming. And sometimes you can feel like, I don't know how I'm going to make this thing happen. Or I don't know how this is going to happen. And I don't really know what the solutions are, right? I don't really know. I just know I don't want this anymore. That's usually what it is. Like, I know I don't want this. And so when you can bring together people who can provide options and you can really share, okay, this is what I see, I really think that you create a power team where you now can really embody what green chemistry is, but you can really also embody what true equity and justice looks like in communities and what that plays out to be, right? Because now you have people on your team who can help advise you. Now you maybe have people on your team who might have funding, who can do research toward that in their research lab if they're in academia, right? Now you might have, you know, an industry that might say, hey, I'm going to champion this now in my company, and I want to have, you know, environmental justice, you know, town meetings, or I want to have, you know, EJ community member, a part of our like staff when they come in and they talk, you know what I mean? So like, when you really create more of a real true partnership and relationship and recognize the value of both people in the conversation, I think it really elevates what can be done when it comes to this, like reaching the sustainable goal. Because a lot of times it feels so overwhelming, you know, people are like, climate change, things are happening, it's too warm, it's too cold, all the things, natural disasters. And it could be a lot. And I think that, but if we started tackling it from a smaller local kind of situation and we slowly kind of just expand from there, we will probably actually get further than just being like, okay, we just have to tackle the beast. Let's just go ahead and tackle the beast. The beast needs to be slayed. And reality is you don't even have the correct tools to slay the beast because you haven't went to those local levels that will actually help equip you to build the tool to beat the big beast. You know what I'm trying to say? Either way, this is my analogy.
And it's a wonderful analogy because, I mean, again, green chemistry being all about getting down to the molecular level to ultimately solve incredibly large challenges. Sidera, I should let you go, but I just want to close with an opportunity or a question of you is, as you look sort of toward the future, knowing you grew up in Atlanta near ATL, you in a community, again, affected by this, you're working with communities who are affected in adverse ways, but also you are deep in the world of green chemistry and seeing how these two are coming together to provide some solutions to these challenges. As you look forward, what are your hopes? Are there particular things that you're excited about that you're seeing starting to happen? Take that question in either of those directions that you would like, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I am super excited about a lot of things that's happening in terms of, I do think that there is now, what I'll see is in the government, specifically in the U.S., there's a big push for environmental justice now, or justice in general. And I think that, and DEIR, those are very important like initiatives now that I think that weren't maybe in the past few years. And I think that there is a lot of support going behind that. And then in terms of green chemistry, that's been growing for the last couple of decades. And I think that there's really becoming to be a movement now when we talk about the SDGs and sustainability and how green chemistry plays a role. So I'm really waiting for these two things to truly collide in one big way, because people have seen that both of these are super important. So now it's like, okay, now if we really see how these are both important together, what change could be seen. And I know that I hope that I can be a part of helping to galvanize that, just starting to have the conversations with people, being able to build the opportunities for people to connect from different backgrounds, whether it's community members and chemists, and being able to have those conversations and recognize why people are saying what they're saying. I think that I do see that move on both ends. Right now, they seem a little disparate. I will say that. But the goal is to really make them connect and really make them one more continuous stream, hopefully in the next few years, because I think that will really catapult us to like the future we want to see. So
interesting. And I think you're onto something on many levels. But when I talk to the various researchers that I interview for this series, you know, many of them are, when I ask what's needed to accelerate things, they're not saying it in the same words, I don't think, but what's under what they're saying is like kind of the energy that's needed to accelerate things is a part and parcel, I think, of what you're talking about. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I've taken enough of your time, and you've given us, thank you. First, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining me. And for this really, really wonderful and wonderfully important look into this intersection of green chemistry and environmental justice. I really, really appreciate it and appreciate your time.
No, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed being able to talk with you and chat about the things that I'm passionate about. So thanks so much.